Today's episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. And a good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk, day two of the Big Iron Farm Show in Fargo, North Dakota. And we are happy to be here once again. Jesse Allen with you as your host. And thank you for making us part of your day as we recap the market trade on this Wednesday. Find us online, markettalkag.com. That's our home on the web, markettalkag.com. Find all our streaming sources there, our social media, and much more. Well, a rather nice update today in the grains. There wasn't a whole lot of disappointment to talk about, I would say, but we do have plenty to discuss. Let's bring in our good friend Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics joining us here today. Mike, good afternoon. And you know, overall, a really solid day. We get to talk about being in the green, you and I. Man, corn, wheat really took off and kind of pulled beans higher with it today, it looked like.
I hope we can do a full show since it wasn't all in the red, Jesse. No, I did think that the market performed extremely well, especially given the cancellations of U.S. soybean export sales. And we think it's China and unknown destinations because the original sale that crossed the wires was a China unknown destination sale. But then Reuters had to pull that back to cancellations. And I think that was really, really important that we kind of threw that off and really got around that very nicely here at this midweek trade, because I think this midweek trade was a crucial day to keep the momentum going and keep the people in the trade talking about their short positions and whether they've overdone it or not. I think if I blew everything out today and the last 3 days, essentially since the USDA report, I think supply is back in the spotlight, a tightening supply. I'm not sure if that would be as much an issue if it weren't for strong and strengthening demand. In other words, the corn ethanol number was extremely strong, but production was up, supplies were down. Unleaded gasoline supplies are at their lowest level since before the pandemic and back in 2019. That helps ethanol get more blended into gasoline. And we've also seen some stories where the Chinese are reducing their quality expectations and requirements for European wheat. And so their wheat demand obviously is strong, and it's an indicator that the supplies of wheat are still very, very tight. So I think we're trading back on supplies. I think it's USDA supplies of wheat are finally getting traded because that was a very friendly report, and we didn't do anything with it after the report came out. I think probably the biggest catalyst has to be, though, the early reports of Illinois and the corn yields that we're seeing there.
And that's a great point that you brought up, and that's a perfect segue because I was going to mention that as well. We're seeing some disappointing yields out of that Eastern Corn Belt. We're hearing more late-season disease in the Eastern Corn Belt. And, you know, we pull up I know you have a corn yield map here. We'll pull this up just for our discussion, Mike, on the video. But very interesting. You know, we talked a lot about the Eastern Corn Belt all year long and how this is going to be the garden spot. This is going to make up for the Western Belt. And now we're starting to maybe pull that a little bit into question. What are your thoughts just with what you're hearing about some of those early yields, Mike?
Yeah, excellent points that you bring up. And I'll add to that that many producers, and I think we in the trade, thought the early corn would be the best because it would have gotten around and not had to deal with the very hot August and very dry August in some of these key states. The map you're looking at right now is the September corn yield estimates by USDA. And then I highlighted the idea that five of these major corn-producing states east of the Mississippi River were all going to have record yields. I don't know a time when I've seen all five of these have the exact same situation where they've been able to have record yields posted. And so that got me thinking even before I started hearing about the corn yields in Illinois. I started looking at topsoil, subsoil moisture levels. So what I did on this map was I highlighted those five states, and then up in red, I put the yield for each state based upon some of the analysis I did. And notice that Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio all have moisture level conditions very similar to 2019. And that's the kind of analysis that I really like, Jesse, is when it all comes together and you've got three states that are contiguous with one another, all having a similar weather pattern in 2019, all having similar yields, all having similar moisture levels as a result. So it really calls into question, if Illinois is having a tough yield situation now, is Indiana going to have a tough yield situation? And is Ohio going to have a tough yield situation? Because as you say, it's disease, it's anthracnose, it's tar spotting. There are some lighter test weights as well. One client in Central Illinois said he's running 52 to 54 pound test weights. And so this could be also disease related, even though fungicide was widely used in these areas. It seems to still be an issue of the plant health not being able to stay solid throughout the growing season. So this leads me to the next analysis. And this is where I did look at the topsoil and subsoil levels in these key states. And I threw in Iowa as well, as a result of the fact that Iowa is obviously the key state to be looking at every year. But if you look at Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and remember that they're similar yield numbers in 2019, this is why I say that, is because topsoil, subsoil moisture levels in all three of these states are almost identical. I mean, within 1 or 2 points of where they were back in 2019. And I just was blown away when I ran this. And all these numbers are as of mid-September.
Well, very interesting numbers, Mike. And we'll flip that over and just talk and look at the price. And we think about how these yield estimates and what we get for final yields in is going to affect our markets. And, you know, we look at world corn prices. And this is interesting as well, as I look at this chart. And I know you can break it down more for us, but, you know, obviously we've been hovering around that that $5 cash price, and we're back up to about $5.40 on the board. We bounced off some lows here, and talk about where world corn prices are at right now in relation to just what we're seeing here in the U.S.
Yeah, this is a chart that is both good and bad. It's good from a standpoint that we are dirt cheap compared to all of our major competitors, or most of our major competitors. It shows very clearly the last week, 2 weeks, what we've had to go through because of the hurricanes, both Ida and Charlie, and the fact that we are now down to prices as low as and recently lower than Argentina. And so we really are competitive. But we're only competitive if we can ship it out the door. And I think this goes to the bigger picture in my more short-term outlook, Jesse. I like the fact that the funds have trimmed their longs. I like the fact that we've traded a lot of COVID fears. I like the fact that the Fed fears have also been traded about when they're going to taper through the currency markets. But what I don't like is we're not getting back up and running yet in the Gulf like we need to. And today, for instance, Gulf corn is still only trading at 601 compared to 643 about 2 weeks ago. This goes back to the hurricanes, but we are still not seeing the basis pop. And we're not seeing that basis pop because we're not up and running completely like we need to be. So this, I think, limits us in terms of what the futures market can do between now and the stocks report. So like last week, I think I mentioned I'm looking at a low, probably closer to the stocks report at the end of the month. I still am on target for that.
Well, Mike, you mentioned the Gulf, and we know that that's going to continue to be an issue until we get up and running there. But, okay, we take the Gulf and we take the yields, and if we continue to have disappointing yields, is that going to outweigh our problems in the Gulf maybe and give us a chance to maybe run this corn market higher? What are your thoughts about that? Can we, you know, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that you know, you just hit it on the nail, in my opinion, Jesse, because if that is going to happen, where would that be reflected first? It'd be in the basis. If we had bad yields and the end users knew that we weren't going to get the supplies that we thought, and my yield estimate in corn nationally is still right around 175, I just can't bring it up based upon this analysis that I've been doing. If that ends up being what the trade thinks, then they should be going after corn with both hands, and exporters should be going after corn with both hands. And so that's the trigger. If I start to see the basis wake up, then I can start thinking, okay, this is a serious problem that's going to be a cash-led recovery, and the cash comes in, basis comes in and supports another move higher along with the wheat market. That's the other side of the coin, that wheat needs to lead this market, and now it's starting to. So I'm more optimistic about the wheat having a major low in place, not having to wait to the end of the month stocks report because it doesn't have the harvest pressure. But when I looked, right before we got on the air today, I looked at all the major basis levels for the day. Cincinnati corn was down another 10. Lincoln, Nebraska down another 22. Decatur, Illinois down another nickel. Decatur, Illinois is now, it's gone from about an 85 over basis to a 10 under basis. So if Illinois, and specifically, has a real issue, you'd think Decatur start to be popping that bid pretty soon.
You would think that, and we'll be watching that closely. I think the next couple of weeks, that's going to be a very big key in this corn market. You mentioned wheat and wheat needing to lead the market trade higher. I know we got those bullish Stats Canada numbers in this week. How much do you take stock in that? And also, how much do you take stock in some of the dry weather concerns we have in winter wheat country right now? How's that all factoring in?
These are big issues, and I think they're extremely big issues because the winter wheat market is wanting more wheat acres, and they're doing that with their new crop bids. The Milo bids, from what I'm hearing from producers out west of me and northwest of me, Milo bids have really gone down because for new crop, because the elevators want that hard red wheat because the quality side of the equation. So I think wheat is in pole position at this point. It just has to do with the dollar and how we are in terms of competition in the Middle East and in Asia because of our transportation and our shipping costs. So I'm a big believer that the wheat has more upside. Lead month soft red wheat at 750, I think, is a real viable target if we don't see the dollar start to really get bought up here.
Well, Mike Zuzulo, our guest from Global Commodity Analytics here on today's Market Talk, live from day two of the Big Iron Farm Show in Fargo, North Dakota. We'll come back. We'll talk livestock. We'll look at the hog market and the cattle market here today as you're listening to Market Talk. We'll be back right after this. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up to date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
As harvest begins, the American Seed Trade Association reminds farmers to be diligent in taking the proper precautions to ensure treated seed does not enter the domestic or export grain supply. When properly handled, seed treatments are an effective agronomic tool that provides seeds the necessary protection for a strong, healthy start. Completely remove all treated seed left in containers and equipment used to handle harvested grain and dispose of it properly. Always be careful to follow state and federal guidelines for proper handling, storage, and disposal of treated seed. For more information, visit seed-treatment-guide.com or contact your seed dealer.
Trains are everywhere. You should always expect one, even on private property. Only cross tracks at designated crossings that fit your equipment. If you don't fit, don't commit. Whatever you're operating, secure your load, raise your equipment, and avoid getting stuck or causing damage. Minimize distractions. Remember, noisy equipment drowns out the sound of a train. Unless you're crossing, always keep a safe distance from train tracks. Look, listen, live. For more info, go to oli.org.
And we're back here on Market Talk, live for the Big Iron Farm Show in Fargo, North Dakota. Jesse Allen back with you here. Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics, our guest today here on this Wednesday. Mike, I know soybeans, we are, you know, you mentioned it, the cancellations today kind of gave us the dip early. Then we kind of pulled back, and it just felt like, you know, you mentioned the pork and bean trade quite a bit. It felt like soybeans worked with hogs yesterday, and today soybeans seemingly just got pulled higher thanks to the strength in corn and wheat. Is that kind of your thoughts there, Mike?
Yeah, and I think it goes back to the October hogs did finish pretty nicely. You know, I think the bellies have a really solid support level all of 2021, right around 155. They bounced off that last week. I think the cutout price is trying to make a low at about 105. If that's the case, we had about a $16 or $19 discount in futures for October hogs versus the CME cash index as of this morning. And so that's a big discount in the futures market as we get closer to October. And I think the hogs are primed for some recovery and some short covering. I think the funds have probably been long enough, have lightened up enough, and their longs have been trimmed enough in all the livestock complex that we probably have a more balanced trade and a trade that's ready for some cash business. So I'll be eager to see what the pork trade does this week, what gets featured a lot this week by the grocery stores, and see whether we can really open up more at the restaurant level. That's something that continues to hamper us, Jesse, is we just seem to be kind of in it, stepping in and out of the restaurants. We're getting one foot in and then we pull back again and we lose business. And we really need to get some more momentum built up there.
On the cattle side, we just couldn't keep that momentum from Tuesday here on Wednesday today. It's just kind of a mixed blah day there in cattle. You know, that JBS fire we had Sunday night into Monday, that put a lot of worry in the trade. Then we took worry out yesterday, and now you come back today, it's just kind of mixed. What are your thoughts with this cattle market and just the tone of it this week?
Well, it looks like the South is going to do some trading from what I'm hearing around 122, 123. So the October fats are very well balanced, kind of like October hogs. It's really the feeders that are still the dilemma and still the issue between having a lot of feeders running around in the cash market and also the fact that the corn market's back rallying. I think the feeders are probably the weak link here. I do feel as though that we made some major headway technically in the cattle market. Some of the 100-day moving averages in fat cattle were tested earlier this week and they held up pretty nicely. So I feel like those recent lows are really good go, no-go gauges as to whether we've made a low here in the cattle or not. Fats and corn seem, in terms of momentum and kind of what you were talking about, corn and fats kind of I put in the same category right now. They don't need to go lower to find business. There's not a lot of competition out there. USDA told us that last week. They pulled back on beef production and inched up the pork production and poultry as well. So beef production is going to steadily go lower at this point. It just goes back to the currencies and how the hogs treat us. So the corn and the wheat and the hogs and the cattle, they seem to be still joined kind of together with the feeders kind of mixed in there. But I would, if I were marketing fats in the next 30 days, I think we could get back up around 125, 127. That would be a place I'd really run and let go of them though.
Well, before we run out of time here for the show today at the Big Iron Show in Fargo, Mike, I should ask you about the outside markets. Crude oil had a nice day today. The Dow Jones was up. Talk about what you're seeing on the outside markets and how that's relaying into the grain and livestock trade.
Yeah, we had a big CPI number come out this week, and that was a big driver to the trade. And I think this is where right now it's an odd trade, Jesse, and I don't have a lot of confidence in it at all when it comes to what I'm about to say. The trade almost thinks now, because the Federal Reserve didn't get their unemployment numbers, and now all of a sudden the CPI showed that we are backing off on inflation, and it is more transitory than what the Fed is going to be end up being right, it looks like, that they don't need to taper. So the market, instead of taking the dollar higher on a more deflationary mindset or less inflationary mindset, it's taking the dollar lower with the idea the Fed's not going to taper as quick. So I really question how long that's going to last. And that still is the biggest problem for me in terms of giving the green light to corn and bean buyers right now from a standpoint of the inflation bull and the funds coming back into the grains. It just doesn't seem like the dollar's ready yet to find a low. So I'm cautiously optimistic that we've been able to do what we've been able to do this month. But I'll go back and wrap up with this comment about the outside markets. If the dollar finds any strength at all, especially against the Brazilian real, I'll be really eager to get a lot more hedging done in soybeans.
And that's a good thought to watch very closely. And of course, Mike, if producers need a little help with their marketing and whatnot, they need some advice, they can always reach out to you. You have a lot of great research on your website, I know, and you're able to work with folks, and it's very simple to get a hold of you, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And being a home office and having a lot of office hours, I can work in the nights. Just let me know if you need to talk in the evening since it's harvest time and you're very, very busy. So go to globalcomresearch.com. GlobalCom with two M's, research.com. Sign up for a trial or go to the trial tab. And as you sign up for a trial, if you have a specific question, just put that in the comments box.
Mike, appreciate the time as always. Thanks for joining us here for Market Talk on this Wednesday. We'll talk to you again next week, sir.
Enjoy Big Iron.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mike Zuzalo with Global Commodity Analytics. Find him online, globalcomresearch.com. That's going to do it for today's edition of Market Talk for this Wednesday, September 15th for the Big Iron Farm Show in Fargo, North Dakota. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great afternoon.